This is The Book and the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
Archaeologists rarely find gold because gold is, well, rare and very valuable. It's always been that way, and so it's surprising that gold came out of a refuse pit at Tel Shiloh this summer. Shiloh was the center of Israelite worship between the Exodus and the building of the temple in Jerusalem. In the first part of our interview with Scott Stripling, the director of the Tel Shiloh excavations for Associates for Biblical Research, he explained that their dig focuses on three areas: a monumental building that may have replaced the tabernacle, the city gateway, and then the favisa, the sacred refuse deposits. Mixed in with a lot of bones and broken pottery in the favisa, they found seven gold pendants.
One is like spoon-shaped. A couple of them are star-shaped. So these are things that people have that are of great value in the sacrificial process. I think they're bringing an animal. They're bringing a libation, a drink offering. And that's what we've got in the pottery that accompanies it. Dozens of goblets and chalices just this season, which are cultic in nature. So we have the animal bones. We have the vessel for the drink offering. And then the thing of great value, the gold piece.
So these were offerings that were presented as part of the sacrificial process.
That's how I'm viewing it. And I have parallels from, say, Tel El Ajul down near Gaza and from the Lachish Foss Temple. I'm going to be presenting on this at a conference in Israel in late October, assuming that I'm able to get into the country with the current situations. So I have a new article planning on presenting this at the conference. It's very exciting. We have another student of mine, Jordan McClinton, who is writing his PhD on this favisa at Veritas International University. Jordan and I are working very carefully and closely together on the favisa material, preparing it for publication. And this is what you want in an excavation. You want to see PhDs coming out of this. So it's original research that's being put forth so people can understand what happened and how we are interpreting it. And at least they have the raw data that if they disagree with us, at least they've got good, clean data to go from.
Have you seen a lot of people visiting again this past summer as in previous years?
It wasn't anything like in the past. It was kind of eerie. We did have visitors, but a lot more Israeli visitors than foreign. We would have occasionally a foreign group. We did have a couple of media groups that came through, but very different from what we normally have.
One of the other things you mentioned in previous interviews was the destruction level that you attribute to the Philistines. Have you come to any new conclusions about that or found any more additional evidence?
We do. As we're going deeper in other squares, we encounter that level. Now, after these six seasons, we've got a good idea of what the stratigraphy is. We can anticipate what we're going to come down on, and we do. So when we get to that level, you can see it clearly. You get a transition in the pottery, and we get good carbon dates. So we can now see nine levels from top to bottom, starting with the Islamic period and then ending up in the Middle Bronze Age II period. Our sort of sweet spots, if you will, are strata 6 and 5, which would be the tabernacle period at Shiloh.
How does that Philistine destruction fit into the biblical story then?
The Bible never comes out and explicitly says that the Philistines destroyed Shiloh. The Ark of the Covenant was sent from Shiloh to Aphek, to Ebenezer, where it was captured. Psalm 78 implies that the Philistines destroyed Shiloh, but it doesn't come right out and say that. We come along as archaeologists and we excavate and we find this destruction level. We date it and then it matches the biblical date. And we can, with a reasonable degree of certainty, say this is very likely the Philistine destruction of Shiloh. They did come, they didn't occupy the site because we don't have a shirt of Philistine pottery. But the fact that they came and destroyed Israel's cultic site, that should not surprise us, since they just routed them in effect. And the Ark of the Covenant has been captured. God has allowed these things. Ichabod has been declared. And to picture the Philistines coming and burning down Shiloh, that's pretty consistent.
It was a pretty dismal time for the Israelites. Well, I'm always glad when you can mention Aphek, since that was where I worked as a volunteer back in 1978.
Oh how exciting. You were on the Philistine side then.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I guess so. Yeah. We also had a tour to Isbeth Sarda, which was identified as the Israelite installation close to Aphek.
Yeah. At Ebenezer, most likely.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. there anything else that needs to be said about Tel Shiloh?
We're already anticipating a great season next year. Very engaged in publications at this point. Now that all the Kirby Del McCotter stuff is published, my complete attention is on Shiloh publications. So we're cranking them out at a pretty good rate right now. Boyd Sievers, as a matter of fact, just had a couple of new publications on the Second Temple period destructions, AD 70 and AD 35. We have both Great Revolt and Bar Kokhba Revolt evidence at Shiloh as well. So every one of these layers are really, really interesting, even though my primary focus is down here. Along the way, these all kinds of interesting areas.
It's all pieces of the puzzle that fills out the history of Israel.
Yeah, it really is.
One of the things we've talked about is wet sifting, which is an important part of your archaeological process, and you're kind of an evangelist for that to other archaeologists. Anything happening interesting about wet sifting?
More and more people are doing it, and I'm still preaching the gospel. More and more people are buying in. I think human nature, we tend to be resistant to this. It takes time, it takes money, but the results and the impact are just undeniable. We're seeing more and more digs that are at least on a limited scale beginning to employ this. We had one dig this year that brought their material to us. Important loci that they had saved, and we actually wet sifted it for them. Now, we added something this year, a new technology of our heavy fraction to do a better job of retrieving the floral material, all of the seeds. So in the past, we would do one pail a day from each locus, or more if it was an important area. The protocol is you take soil, you mix in a bunch of water, stir it up real good, the seeds float to the top, you extract them, dry them, and then we have a botanist that goes through all these things and can identify them. In reality, we were not capturing the heavy fraction that we needed because not all the seeds are going to come to the top. Some of them are still tied to stems and things like this. So we created a system which is really state of the art, and it connects into our wet sifting system. And now through a series of five different levels of screens, we're able to, by probably 100 times, increase the number of seeds that we have been getting in the past. And so as other digs would come, we would sort of add that to the gospel of wet sifting that we're preaching, and to have them bring their material and us do theirs and show them what we have is really exciting. And so we learn from our colleagues all the time, and hopefully they can learn something from us also.
For those who just tuned in, we're talking with Scott Stripling, the Director of Excavations for Associates for Biblical Research at Tel Shiloh, about the 2024 excavation season earlier this summer. Last year when we talked, I was also looking for an update on the Mount Ebal tablet inscription, which has been controversial for the last couple of years. A year ago, you said that you were hoping to publish what's found on the outside of that tablet. What's the status there?
Peter van der Veen was not able to come to Israel. Now he has recovered from cancer and is in good health, but with all the situation in Israel, was not able to come this summer. So we really don't want to rush this. I want to get the epigraphers to have personal hands-on in the lab to examine this on the outside. However, Gershon Galil has recently published the outside of it in a new publication, and it's on the cover of his new book. It's all in Hebrew, and so it hasn't been widely read yet, but he certainly has a reading of it, and it's similar to what's on the inside, which is what we thought all along, because we were seeing the same characters on the outside with the naked eye that we were seeing through the tomographic scans on the inside. I hope Gershon's publication will be translated into English and it'll become much more accessible, and we can all look at it and critique, agree or disagree. And then we hope to also be able to do an independent article on the outside as well.
Before we wrap up this conversation, I want to touch on other archaeological excavations in Israel. I know you always enjoy visiting other excavations while you're there in the summer. One of the big stories that has been fascinating for me for the last 6 or 8 months since it was first announced is this moat that was found in Jerusalem. I've talked to several archaeologists. They're kind of hesitant about talking about it too much. I don't think they've seen it or haven't read scientific publications about it. But what's your take on this moat that has been proposed between the city of David, the oldest area of Jerusalem, and the temple area?
I don't know why we would have to be so cautious. It's there, unless we're assuming that they're showing us fake photos or something. The archaeologists have dug it. We can see it. I haven't read the peer-reviewed stuff. It's not out either. But I mean, the fact that a moat exists where we did not know, kind of at the end of the Ophel and connecting down with the city of David, right in that nexus, there was a moat. That's really interesting. And carvings in the bedrock that are enigmatic and all kinds of things. This is why I have the best job in the world. I get to learn something new almost every day. A lot of times we get surprised by what we learn. We were not expecting that.
There doesn't seem to be any clue in the Bible that I can think of right now that there was a moat, except there was this thing called the Millo that's mentioned several times in the Old Testament. And there are several proposals for what the Millo might have been. Do you think the Millo might have been the moat?
Now, that's an interesting thought. Something that was kind of rolling around in my mind, since we're throwing this against the wall and see what sticks. Maybe the Sinor, you know, what was we used to talk about Warren's shaft. As being the Sinor, the shaft through which David's men came into the city. No one now holds that view just because the stratigraphy doesn't support it. But there was some sort of an entry point into the city. Perhaps this moat could have been a Sinor if it's carved into to bedrock. I really don't know.
Any other excavations that took place this summer that you had a chance to visit, or anything else from the summer that you wanted to mention?
Well, I was impressed by the Tel Bernai excavations are now coming to a close. Yitzhak Shai has been directing these for maybe 12, 13, 14 years, something like that. They have a late Bronze Age monumental building that's similar to ours. And so giving a really close look at what they're doing. And incidentally, they're having trouble finding their fourth wall also. We're always looking for parallels. And that's a good one from the Shephelah.
We just talked with Steve Ortiz about that excavation. Okay. So that's, you're talking about the Canaanite coal complex.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. Right across the highway from Shiloh, there's a site called Tel Rafit. I have a team member, a staff archaeologist named Aaron Tavgar, who's an excellent young Israeli archaeologist who is working with us and is certainly part of my leadership team. And he is heading the excavations at Tel Rafit right across the highway. And so we were studying that pretty closely because they have an early Bronze Age and intermediate Bronze Age occupation. We don't pick up until MB2. So we're calling this like Shiloh's older sister, because maybe when the climate changed, the folks had to move closer to the water source, which we had at Shiloh.
Well, our thanks to Scott Stripling for joining us on today's program. He is provost of the Bible Seminary in Katy, Texas, president of the Near East Archaeological Society, and director of excavations for Associates for Biblical Research at Tel Shiloh. The Near East Archaeological Society is one of the publishers of Artifacts, our quarterly biblical archaeology news magazine, and you can find out more about Artifacts at our website at radioscribe.com. We also feature breaking news videos from the Israel Antiquities Authority to keep you up to date on archaeology that way at radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders in the Bible through biblical archaeology on The Book in the Spade.
The Book in the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.